ESPN 97.5.
Good name. Totally fits.
A Gau Media Station.
KFC, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
So it really is kind of the impending doom where your team is going to do something you really wish they wouldn't do. Where it's like inevitable. Almost like you're sitting in a room full of sick people and thinking, you know what? I'm going to get sick because I'm surrounded by a bunch of sick people. And there's nothing that I can do about it. I can wear the mask. I can take, you know, all the vitamin C in the world. But in the end, all these germs are going to get me. That's kind of how I feel with this impending marriage between the Rockets and Carmelo Anthony in the New York Times, Mark Stein saying that once Carmelo's buyout is official, he intends to sign with the Rockets. Thankfully, they're going to sign him for the minimum, not going to use any of that exception money. They're actually going to sign him for the minimum. But I like the idea of bringing Carmelo to Houston about as much as I like the idea of shaving with mace. There's nothing about Melo that fits the Houston Rockets. And for a team that is so analytically driven, to just throw all the analytics out the window and say, well, screw it, he's Carmelo Anthony. He was on Team USA. We got to get him. That doesn't make any sense to me. But this appears to be what they're doing. You know, the girl that you chased after in high school, who was gorgeous, well, 20 years later, you know, looks like she had a small village, has 12 kids, and, you know, smokes three packs a day, is a massive alcoholic. It's not quite the same, you know what I mean? And that's kind of what they're getting. You know, Carmelo has turned the Rockets down twice before. But now he needs the Rockets. See, before he just wanted the most money. But now he's already getting the money. Oh, okay, now my reputation is in shambles. Now people are talking bad about me career-wise, more so than ever before, and with good reason. Carmelo's abilities are diminishing. Carmelo's athleticism is greatly diminished. Imagine being 6'8 and barely being able to dunk. At 6'8". And look, the things that you can feel good about with this signing is that he's only getting the minimum. And you can hope that if he turns out to be the disaster in Houston that I'm horribly afraid he's going to be, they'll actually have the guts to trade him or cut him loose. Now, you can send them off to a bad team. They'll take them for $2.4 million. Sell some tickets, whatever. But this is a guy. I'm always seeing people talk about Carmelo. Oh, he could be the role that Ariza played. He could be a spot-up shooter. No, he can't. By his own words, his own admission, he can't be effective in that role. Said it at the end of the season. He does not feel he can be effective in that role. Those are his words. Now let's just throw him out the window because now he's coming to Houston and his entire career track record of being a jackass, well, that doesn't matter because now he's coming to Houston. What world do you live in? And I understand because this is like, you know, it's inevitable that he's going to sign. In Houston, a lot of people are changing their tune because, all right, well, you know, we're gonna have him. So how can I make this positive? You can't. All right, look at Melo's numbers. First half of last year, second half of last year. All right, when the novelty of getting out of New York and getting off that awful team and playing with Russell Westbrook and playing with Paul George and, you know, Big Three, and, you know, they're going to be able to compete with the Rockets and the Warriors. When all that novelty wore off in the second half, his numbers went down hard. He was having way too many games. He had zero assists. Zero assists. Not, you know, one, two, or every now and then. No, it's just flat out zeros. He became a black hole in Oklahoma City when he finally got the ball, he wasn't giving it up. Remember how Carmelo forced his exit in Denver? You need to trade me. You're only going to trade me to the Knicks. They're the only team I'm going to go to. And he forced his way into New York, where he got James Dolan to overstep his president of basketball operations, Donnie Walsh, and give away the whole team, all the young players, all players that were making the Knicks attractive to a guy like Carmelo Anthony. He traded them all into Denver. And the Knicks became Carmelo's team. And the first thing Carmelo did was he walked into Mike D'Antoni's office, Mr. Big Shot, Chauncey Billups in tow, and said, "No running. We play half court now." Okay. Not going to try it. Don't coach me. I'll tell you how to run the offense. Then went to mess. This is the thing. People have this, those, oh, Carmelo and D'Antoni. And I saw this from a guy that I really respect, that, you know, we kind of changed the wording and the way he put things with Carmelo and D'Antoni there. Well, D'Antoni resigned because he didn't get along with Carmelo. And that is, well, that's not really accurate. See, what's accurate is that Carmelo refused to play for D'Antoni, and he dogged it on purpose and admitted it to the media afterwards. That Carmelo went to management and ownership with a "it's him or me" ultimatum. In basically in 1 year in New York, he had already gone to management and said, "You have to get rid of him or I can't stay." And you just gave up all those players to get me. So you knew what it was going to be. Mike D'Antoni's not stupid. He knew what the writing on the wall was. But Carmelo never intended to be coachable for Mike D'Antoni. And Carmelo pretty much went on to be a massive jackass his entire career in New York. He was a jerk to D'Antoni. He was a jerk to Jeremy Lin. The whole reason Jeremy Lin came to Houston was because Carmelo basically ran him out of town. Couldn't get away from him fast enough. Remember, Jeremy Lin came to Houston, got an offer sheet from Daryl Morey, went back to New York, called James Dolan and said, "Hey, Houston signed me to this offer sheet. They're going to do this. This is the offer sheet they're going to sign me to." And Dolan said, "It's okay, we'll match." So Jeremy Lin went back to Daryl Morey and said, "They said they're going to match. Let's fix it." That's the whole reason Jeremy Lin became a Rocket. And that's why Dolan was so angry with Lin, because he thought that, oh, this offer sheet is done and I'm going to match it. Not the offer sheet as a concept and you were trying to find out if I would match it before you signed it. So you went back and you put a poison pill in and then you signed it. Jeremy Lin wanted to get the hell away from Carmelo Anthony. And then after not being able to get along with anybody in New York, and then not being able to get along with anybody in Oklahoma City, now he's going to come here And everything's going to be different because, oh, it's Houston. I don't know if the drugs are better in Houston, but if you think that, you're probably smoking too many of them. More on the Rockets next.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Late Hits, Patrick Creighton, ESPN 97.5. The one and only live, local, and consistent evening sports radio show here in Houston. Don't have to guess who's coming on. It's going to be me. Tyler Scott on the other side of the glass, 713-780-3776, HRMP listener line. Getting into the Houston Rockets right now. And, of course, look, if you're a Rockets fan, then the big news is that, look, Carmelo Anthony is going to be coming to Houston. Barring some last-second change of heart, we're going to be stuck with him. And I say stuck with him because we just went through his history. And right after the season ended in Oklahoma City, the first thing Carmelo did was he bitched about the team. And he bitched how, oh, they don't know how to use me. They didn't have a plan for me. I can't be effective as a spot-up three-point shooter. I'm not coming off the bench. First thing he did, gripe, 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 and gripe. So what makes you think that's going to be any different when he comes to Houston? Now, for people who are talking about, well, you know, in the postseason when they need to get a basket, you know, without Chris Paul, you saw how, you know, Harden couldn't get a basket and Trevor Ariza couldn't get a basket. Nobody, they were having trouble scoring. Well, let's keep this in mind. In the first round against the Utah Jazz, Carmelo Anthony averaged under 13 points a game on under 37% shooting, including 21% from three. All right, in five games, he had five turnovers and two assists. And both of those assists came in game one. That means Carmelo went four straight games without an assist. And also was shooting like trash. What in what he did last year makes you feel like Carmelo is suddenly going to be the answer to the problems should Chris Paul get hurt? All right, beginning in February, towards the end of February, the Thunder were a better team when either Alex Abrines, let me say that again. Alex Abrines or Jeremy Grant were in the lineup instead of Carmelo Anthony. The Thunder's net rating with Carmelo was 2.7 after February 24th. It was 3-0 with Abrines and 4-9 with Jeremy Grant. They were better when he sat. Oklahoma City was better from February 24th forward when Carmelo Anthony was parked on the bench. Okay? He averaged less than six rebounds a game, shot under 36% for the year from three. But he's too cool for school when it comes to coming off the bench. This is the guy who's going to vault the Rockets to the next level. I can't be the only person that understands none of these things match up. I can't be the only person who sees, wow, this is not going to work. In fact, check this out. If Carmelo Anthony signs with the Rockets, the sports line projection, which is, you know, they're a partner with CBS and with 24/7 Sports. They do a lot of handicapping and all that type of stuff. Their projection for Houston's chances to win the title actually go down. If Carmelo signs in Houston, they project Houston will be worse. Worse. And you're adding Carmelo without losing something else. You're just adding Carmelo, and they think that would be worse. The magic formula for the Rockets last year was that they got tremendous defense out of Luke Bamute, out of PJ Tucker, out of Trevor Ariza, and those guys hit threes. So they could be in, you know, on the wing, in the corner, you know, PJ in the corner, Bamute in the corner, Ariza on the wing, catch and shoot three, play hellacious defense. That was what the difference was in the Rockets from last year to the season before, was they played much improved defense. Losing Trevor and Bamute together is a big blow for the Rocket defense. Adding Carmelo Anthony is another blow to the defense because he doesn't play any. Spare me Olympic Melo. Olympic Melo is a fiction. Olympic Melo is a figment of your imagination. Okay? If Tyler Scott sat at this table opposite Olympic Melo with a $100 bill in the middle of it and the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus on the other two ends, Tyler Scott's coming out with that $100 bill because those other three people don't exist. And I really wish that the Easter Bunny existed because I want more Cadbury eggs, bottom line. These things don't exist. The only thing that I hope is that, you know, again, after, you know, the first half of the season where the novelty of being in Houston and playing with your buddy Chris Paul and, hey, you won 65 games and they were better than Thunder. But once all that novelty wears off and you get into the second half of the season, is Carmelo going to go in the tank the way he went in the tank on Oklahoma City? Is he going to get ticked off about being the third wheel the way he got ticked off about being the third wheel in Oklahoma City? Is his offense going to continue to go down? His shooting percentage go down? Three-point percentage go down? Rebounding rate go down? Assist rate go down? Just like it did in Oklahoma City. Every arrow on Carmelo's life as a basketball player is pointing down. He does none of the things that they need, that they lost, as they became successful and were a pulled hammy away from winning a title. He does none of those things. This fascination with Carmelo Anthony doesn't make any sense. I wish I could find some kind of silver lining in this for you. But then I'd be lying, and I will not lie to you. I will not lie to you. I will not deliberately misrepresent, unless, you know, we're doing a bit. But, you know, then we're doing a bit, and we're going to tell you afterwards that we were doing a bit. There's nothing there. But then we get into the other issues with the Rockets, which are, you know, Clint Capella. Capella doesn't have a deal, and he's not happy. Well, Tad Brown was speaking today. Here's Tad Brown talking about Clint Capella and his deal.
We love Clint, and Clint is a big part of our team. He's been a big part of our team, and we are very hopeful that we're going to get.
We're having technical difficulties. Please stand.
Something done very soon. I know Daryl and his representatives.
It always freezes.
All right. So the computers are not cooperating for Tyler. He's pretty much going to punch them relentlessly until they work. But basically, Tad Brown saying that they're working on a deal and they expect to get something done with Clint Capella and get that taken care of. Now, again, if they offered Capella 4 years and $85 million, I don't blame Clint for wanting more, because I never blame any athlete for wanting more. You don't know how long your career is going to be. Just look at Isaiah Thomas. All right, 2 years ago, Isaiah Thomas was in the conversation for MVP. He had become like an icon in Boston. He was scoring points in the fourth quarter at record paces. And he thought this year he'd be getting a $150 million max contract. Then he got injured. And then his sister died. And then he got injured again. And now he's signed for the minimum. So I never fault a guy for trying to get whatever dollar he can get when he can get it. But 4 years and $85 million for Clint Capella, that's not a bad offer. If we're just going to be real about stuff, Clint is not a $25 million a year guy. He's not. And, you know, if he wants to say, you know what, I will take a two-year deal with an opt-out after 1 year and we can rediscuss next season. I don't know if they'll give it to him, but I could understand if he asked for it, because there's not as much money in the market this year as there will be next year. Maybe he wants to be able to hit the market next year. I know the qualifying offer isn't a whole lot, but would you give up, you know, what is, you know, essentially, what is that, like $17 million a year? And it's a lot of money to pass up. Wait, actually, 4 years and $85 million, that's over $20 million a year. That's 21 and a quarter a year. And he's trying to hold out for, what, 25? I don't know. Honestly, I don't think he's a $21 million guy. But they made him a legit offer. Rockets are going to – and look, the Rockets are going to need to get him in, because you can't lose every defensive player on your team outside of P.J. Tucker. Somebody who's not a guard has to play defense. All right. Get back into the Astros here for a bit. Talk about some of the moves that they could make at on the infield. But let's peek at the bullpen. Is there anybody besides Zach Britton that maybe – might be a fit? We'll get into it next. Late Hits.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. ACA could be tweaked, reformed, or repealed in the future. But for now, employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, so is there someone you've got on your hit list you want to see the Astros go out and get? 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line. Do you have a hit list of guys you want the Astros to get? Who is it? Why is it? Who's the guy that you want? I know that they certainly have been intrigued on Britton. I know, but they've been on Britton for a long time. And as far as the bullpen is concerned, yeah, I'm sure they want to add to that pen, and they probably want to get, you know, some more sure arms, for, especially for the back of that pen, because last year the pen was useless. And at times this year, that pen has been kind of useless. I know we'll get into the whole, somebody will probably say, oh, but look at their overall number. Well, overall, we're not talking about overall. We're talking about, you know, seven-game postseason, followed by seven-game postseason, followed by seven-game postseason. It does break down to that small sample size. So I'm not interested in how well the bullpen pitched against the Royals and the Orioles and the Rangers. I'm interested in how they pitched against the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Indians, because that's what they're going to play. That's who they're going to play when the games matter. And right now, at the back of the pen, you know, everybody who's had legitimate shots at the back of the pen has had meltdowns. All right, Giles has had plenty of meltdowns. Will Harris has had plenty of meltdowns. All right, Cionel Perez doesn't look like he's ready yet. You know, Joe Smith started the year terrible. And he wound up going on the DL. And, you know, since coming back from the DL, well, he's given up zero runs. Now, his ERA has gone from 5.49 to 4.05. They've used him, you know, for an inning plus, and then they use them to get one out. And of the games that he's pitched, he's really pitched in three of his last eight games, he's pitched in high leverage spots. Otherwise, game's been, you know, more or less decided. But in the eight games since he's returned, he's given up four hits, hasn't walked anybody, struck out five. He's pitched like the Joe Smith we kind of expected him to be. A guy who's been a very reliable late-inning reliever and has stepped into the closer spot when needed at times. So right now, you feel pretty good about Joe Smith after having come back off the DL. He's pitching well. The other guy they acquired this offseason, Hector Rondon. Rondon's pitching pretty well. Got a 1.53 ERA, got a 1.13 WHIP, 46 Ks in 35 innings. He's had a couple of late meltdowns. Not as many as the other guys, but he's had a couple of late meltdowns. He's had a couple of situations where he's come in with men on base and gotten the count to 0-2 and then given up a hit and given up the inherited runners. Now, that doesn't count against him. It counts against, you know, the other pitcher. But he's had those spots. He's blown a few of his own. Colin McHugh has been, forget good, he's been ridiculous. ERA under one, WHIP is 0.7. Got 60 Ks in 47 innings, where he has only given up 23 hits and 10 walks. He's 5-0. Considering how the rotation has held up and considering that they're getting innings out of all five of their starters, and you still have Peacock who can move in to the rotation if needed, right now it's Rondon's. I would think it's Rondon's job to lose right now. Colin McHugh's got to be next in line. He's been their best non-starter. He's got to be next in line. And dare I say this without being struck by lightning, Tony Sipp has earned a bigger role. He had an ERA under 2. Looking like the old Tony Sipp, not the guy we've seen the last 2 years. All right, let's hit the phone. 713-780-3776. Trevor, you're on Late Hits. What's up, Trevor?
Hey, man. I took one of my points with Tony Sipp. I was thinking we don't really have a need for a lefty reliever as good as he's been. I mean, obviously, he's been pretty bad these last few years, but you can really count on him this year for everything that he's done. You know, I mean, Zach Britton would be nice for obvious reasons. He's Zach Britton. He's been one of the best closers in the league for years. But there's a few guys that I want just a little bit more just because of how good Tony Sipp has been. And that Raisel Iglesias from the Reds, and a surprise you probably didn't expect to hear is Mike Minor from the Rangers. He hasn't been great, but he's another guy like Peacock and McHugh who can eat up a lot of innings if need be. And then a couple fielders, because we don't know what's going on with Correa's back at this point in time, is Jose Abreu and Wilson Ramos.
Now, Raisel Iglesias has been pretty good the last 2 years. And, you know, again, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, he's got kind of a cheap contract, but the Reds are in sell mode. Raisel Iglesias would be a nice guy to put at the back of the rotation, the back of the bullpen. I'm with you on that. I'm not real big on Mike Minor. I remember Mike Minor coming up with the Braves, and he was supposed to be this stud starter, and it just hasn't worked out. But Raisel Iglesias is definitely a guy that if they can get him, that'd be great. Another guy, believe it or not, in the bullpen who is pitching well this year, Joaquin Soria of the White Sox. He's got 14 saves. He's been pitching pretty well. His strikeout rate is up, and he's not a guy who's known for being a big time strikeout guy anymore, but he's turned back into being a big strikeout guy at age 34, pitching on the White Sox, and the White Sox are certainly going nowhere fast. There's another guy if you're concerned about Britton and the health and the ruptured Achilles. I'm with you on the idea of having insurance for Correa. Now, if they get Abreu, I believe, is a first baseman and not necessarily a very good defensive first baseman, but he's a guy who's been a big power hitter. Power is down this year, but in 3 of his first 4 seasons, hit 30 homers. He's a guy, big slugging percentage, usually hits for a much higher average, but considering he's on a bad team, he's one of those guys, you look at his numbers, you have to look at him through a prism of, is he really motivated at age 31 playing on one of the 3 worst teams in baseball? Whereas what would his motivation level be if he were to come to the Astros? And, you know, does that bump him? I mean, think about the bump the Astros got from Verlander when they acquired him. Look at the bump they've gotten from Gerrit Cole this year, now that he's got a chance to win. Would a guy like Jose Abreu, now he's got to play first, which means if you're talking about, it's hard to go after that guy under this idea. If you get him, you got to play him. So if he's not going to play first, he's got a DH. That means Gattis has to go behind the plate. And if he is going to play first, it means you're moving Gurriel to third and Breggs to short. But that's a legit bat, my friend. Appreciate the call, Trevor. That is a legit bat who's probably available. But you can't get him and say, oh, I could put him on the bench a couple of days. No, if you get Jose Abreu, he's playing every day. Hit the final segment next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
You know, Tyler, I'm good with Metallica Mondays being a thing. There's nothing wrong with Metallica Mondays. We should all have more Metallica Mondays. Now, are you a fan of the having to trek like 8 hours to go see them?
I saw them whenever they played at NRG.
Rabbi, is their next tour the one where they're only in like? Lubbock and El Paso, is that the...
I don't know. I'll have to check on that. I don't know about that.
Because I have no desire to go to either of those two places.
Yeah, especially Lubbock. Like, maybe El Paso. I know a lot of people who grew up there, so maybe if they decided to go, then it would be a fun time, but...
Yeah, that's got to be like a group road trip. Yeah. That can't be, I'm going to drive with like one person... How far is it from here to El Paso? It's going to be like a whole day's drive, right?
I can imagine. It's probably a little more than Lubbock.
Like, is it like 8 hours, 9 hours?
Lubbock's like 14, I thought.
What?
Yeah.
No. Oh, definitely not going there. I am not going. I'm not making a 14-hour drive. 14-hour drive in state? No, I'd shoot myself. No, we're definitely not doing that. What's the farthest you ever drove to go to a concert?
I was thinking about driving to Austin once. Actually, I guess technically I drove to Dallas for not exactly. I guess we went for the concert, but we made like a whole weekend out of it. So we didn't drive to the concert, then drive back. We drove up there, stayed a night, partied, then went to the concert the next day. Then came back the day after.
Okay, that's not too bad. And the furthest I ever drove for a concert, I drove 3.5 hours, which wound up being a little bit more because of traffic, but drove 3.5 hours up to see a show because the boss wanted to go see a particular band of hers that she loved, and that was the closest show. So they weren't coming to New York City. I had to go up to Albany to go see them.
I was mistaken on Lubbock and El Paso drive times. Lubbock is about 8 hours.
Oof. And it's not 14, but 8 is still an oof.
El Paso is actually further at close to 11.
Wait, I can drive 11 hours and still be in Texas?
Yep. And that's pretty much the furthest point. I was thinking Amarillo is, because that's further up north than Lubbock, so I think that's where I was
but
getting
still,
that other number.
8 hours is insane. You know, driving 3.5 hours for a show was an overnight stay. Like, you drove up, you went to the show, and you stayed overnight, and then drove back the next day. You didn't do that in one day. I've been to Austin for a show. Same thing. You know, what is it to Austin? Like 2 hours, a little 2 hours and change?
Two and a half if you're fast.
So I did go to see, I went to see Iron Maiden in Austin, which was awesome. And just stay the night. I was so wiped out from that drive and then the show and just going crazy that the next day, I woke up, like I got back to the room and literally was asleep in 4 minutes, which never happens because normally it takes me like an hour or so just to settle
just
down.
To wind down, yeah.
4 minutes, I was out. Woke up. Checkout time was noon. I woke up at 11:50.
Wow.
And I was like, you know that four-letter word rhymes with hit? Said that a lot. Took the fastest shower I ever took. Got dressed, threw all my stuff in the bag, and it was time to go. When you're in the hotel and you're like, we got 10 minutes. Hurry up.
Yeah, that's not necessarily a hard time, but I mean, you can fudge a few minutes.
Yeah, it just like I was in because for me to A, fall asleep that quickly, I mean, I fell asleep with my clothes were still on. And to sleep all the way through, I haven't slept like that long probably since I was in college and certainly haven't since. The idea that you could sleep all the way to almost noon, that's a foreign concept to me. So that was a little bit of like a, oh my God, we gotta go type of situation there. But yeah, longer 3.5 hours, the longest I've ever driven for a concert. I did it one time. It was an appeasement thing. And then on the way back, she was sick the whole way home. And I had to pull over twice for gear reversal. That wasn't fun.
Those aren't fun road trips.
That is not a fun road trip when the person you're with has the reverse gears. And it's a 3.5 hour ride home. And every time you hit a bump, they look at you like, I think I'm going to vomit. Yeah, that wasn't fun. Show was good. Next day, not so much. What, I guess, have you ever gone to a show and just been thoroughly disappointed? Especially if it was somebody that you were looking forward to seeing and you were just like, oh man, this is terrible.
No, not really. I tend to pick and choose shows that I'm essentially very big fan of the band. So if I know that they're playing, like I guess you could say like some sound issues for a couple bands, just like not having a good mix. But other than that, most all of them do not disappoint.
I'm with, usually you go to a show and things go well. And because, you know, I'm kind of old, there's a certain amount of like the nostalgia act thing that I like to go see. Well, it's about, I don't know, it's probably about 8-9 years ago. Still living in New York at the time. And one of my favorite venues to go see a concert was at Jones Beach Amphitheater. So it's right on the water. You go down to the beach and they've got this huge stage right up against the water. It's awesome. And one of my buddies had said, hey, do you want to go see Boston? They're going to the beach. And at the time, I'm like, all right, well, you know, who's still in the band? And he's like, well, lead singer's still in the band. I'm like, okay, well, they'll sound normal. Let's go. We go. And now you'd think, okay, they're going to play all the old hits, everything, everybody, like, you know, nostalgia thing. They played like 3 songs from the first album, 1 song from the second album, 1 song from the third album, and then played all this new whiny political crap that was on this, I guess they put out a new album or something, and it was, you know, all the new members of the band. Everything was just political whining. It is the first and only show I ever walked out of.
Wow. You say that, and that actually, I have seen some shows where I didn't hear certain songs that I wanted to hear, and that was kind of a disappointment. But other than that, can't really complain too much about
it. It was so bad. We were halfway through the show, and the theater was half empty. Like, people were walking out in droves. And having been on that stage in the past, I know that even when all the lights are on, you can tell when the place is half empty. So they knew when they came on stage that the place was packed and that they were halfway through their set and people were leaving in droves because they're playing all these songs that nobody knows. And people wanted to go hear the songs they knew. Like, don't, when you see that, like, we're just like, oh, wow, you know what? This isn't working. Maybe we should play the stuff they came to hear instead of, well, we have to get our agenda in. I want to say thank you to Joe Duarte of the Houston Chronicle. Also want to say thank you to Nate Griffin, who was not here, but Joe thought he was here. Tyler Scott on the other side of the glass. Back at it tomorrow night. See you then.
Listen to your favorite ESPN 97.5 show on the go with the ESPN 97.5 app. Brought to you by Saltgrass Steakhouse. Great food, legendary hospitality. Download the app in your iOS or Android app store today.
Get ready for the downloads.